we're in a series right now called Wasted with a question mark. And that series, Wasted, is meant to look at issues of value in our lives. If we were thinking about how do I invest my life well? How do I get significance out of my life, value out of my life, eternal things out of my life? What do I need to do? How do I bring myself into alignment with God so that that is the end result of the life that I am living? And we said that Jesus didn't die just to make our lives comfortable. He didn't die so that, you know, we could all be nice people. His death has a much more significance than that. And the Bible says that Christ came to give us life, or what we would call salvation, the forgiveness of our sin, and life to the fullest. He came also so that we could grab kind of the richness of life out of the present time that we have here on the planet. And so we're asking ourselves, how do we do that? How do we get the most out of our lives and bring ourselves into alignment with God? There's a great quote by a pastor named Stephen Verdict, and he says this: most people are not in danger of ruining their lives. Most people are in danger of wasting them. The biggest danger that most of us face between now and next weekend is not going out and flushing our lives. Some of us may do that, but most of us won't. The biggest danger that most of us face between now and next weekend is going out and doing nothing with our lives in the next week. Just kind of existing, kind of living on the shallow plane and not getting any of that eternal investment or deeper parts of life that God wants to give us. So we've been wrestling with that, this life of value. What does it look like? How does it work? And we don't want to just raise these questions and leave them like lingering out there with all of us having a guilt trip. But we're trying to put in some of these steps. How do I actively position my life to direct it or to move it toward a place of value? So we've been looking at this, and let's talk about some. We said that there's five steps. We're through three of them. I'm going to talk about number four this weekend. Here's the first three that we talked about. We talked about this. The first step to living a life of value is to say yes to Jesus. Yes to Jesus. We call it the radical yes. So in my relationship with God, the answer is yes before the question is ever asked. The answer is yes before the question is ever asked. So God, it's the radical yes. Whatever you say in the Bible, whatever, however you personally interact with me, yes, I will do whatever it is you've asked me to do. You can kind of count on that and bank on it. The second step is to say no to myself. And we talked about the temptations of life, lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. And we said a radical yes is always attached to a radical no. When I walk toward Jesus, I'm always walking away from myself and allowing him to define my life. So step one's a radical yes, step two is a radical no. And then last weekend, we talked about this idea of go. A radical yes, a radical no will always lead us to a dynamic go. I can't say yes to Jesus and no to myself and wind up living the way that I've always been living. I'm going to move. My life is going to change. And so kind of accepting that dynamic go. So we've been processing through that. If you haven't been here, go out to our website, hit the media tab. You can listen to them, watch them, get a free podcast through iTunes if you want, and listen to them and kind of fill in all those details. But let's go to step four then. Radical yes, radical no, a dynamic go, and then step four is this, it's follow. I'm going to follow. So it's yes, no, go, and follow. And let's talk about this a little bit. When I get the go, every go has a follow attached to it. The go is me kind of breaking my moorings. I'm gonna break out of my life. This is Craig and Jackie right now. We're retiring our life in North America. We're breaking our moorings. We're gonna go. Well, by the time you go and arrive, there's a whole process in the middle that is a journey. And this is the follow. How do I approach the follow? What is entailed in the follow? And why does God have me do that? Why doesn't he instantaneously transport me to the destination? Why does he often lead me along the way to cause me to arrive someplace? So let's talk about this. Yes, no, go, and follow. Last weekend, we talked about a guy named Elisha, and we saw God call him to follow. And I want to go back to Elisha a little bit today and pick up some observations about following. Now, let me pack the backstory here so it all makes sense. At this point in the Bible, this point in history, the main way that God spoke to people was through these guys called the prophets. And the main prophet of the day was a guy named Elijah, okay? And last weekend, we looked a little bit at Elijah, and Elijah was instructed by God to, in essence, find an apprentice, and the apprentice name is Elisha, right? A little confusing. If I wrote the Bible, it would have been Elijah and Steve, something clear, but it's not. So Elijah and Elisha, okay? So Elijah goes to Elisha, throws his cloak around him, which was a symbol of the prophet, and said, hey, you're the next prophet. Elisha was not in prophet school. He wasn't a pastor, a priest, anything like that. Elisha was a farmer, and he was in the middle of plowing a field when God called him to follow him. He stopped what he was doing. He burned his plows, and he went. He got the go from God, and he broke the moorings, and he went. Now, through the rest of the book of 1 Kings in the Bible into the beginning of the book of 2 Kings in the Bible, it's the story of Elijah and Elisha. It's kind of like Elijah and Elisha's big adventure. And they're going through the Bible, and miracles are happening, and they're speaking truth to people, and kings and queens are chasing them, trying to kill them, and they're honoring God, and this is all kind of taking place. It's this really fascinating story. You see the supernatural a lot. God is kind of obviously on their team through this whole thing. They get to the book of 2 Kings, which is where we're going to land today. In fact, why don't you open your Bibles up there? 2 Kings chapter 2. If you don't have a Bible, there's some there under the chairs. It's page 252, and the Bible's under the chairs. And if you're a smartphone or iPad person, we use the YouVersion app. So grab that app. Click on live event, and our zip code is 44333. By the way, if you don't have a Bible or a newer one, just take one of those under the chairs with you. And if you don't have a smartphone or an iPad, grab the persons next to you and run. And you can have it then, all right? So 2 Kings chapter 2, this is the end of Elisha and Elijah's journey, okay? Now, Elijah is a fascinating guy because of a bunch of reasons, but this is one. Elijah never died. There's two guys in the Bible that never died. One was this guy named Enoch way back in the beginning, and the other one was Elijah. So Elijah never died, and like his soul went to heaven, his body went into the ground. God came and got Elijah, and it was a reward for his faithfulness and for his desire and kind of his willingness to honor God. And so you'll see here in a minute, God comes down with a chariot of fire and horses and a whirlwind and takes Elijah to heaven. He never died. And that's kind of the climax of his story on earth and the end of the Elijah-Elisha book, so to say. And then the rest of the time, it's Elisha on his own. So look at this. It's kind of fascinating. Verse 1, chapter 2, 2 Kings. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way to Gilgal. Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here. The Lord has sent me to Bethel." But Elisha said, "As surely as the Lord lives and you live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. The company of the prophets at Bethel came out to Elisha and asked, "Do you know that the Lord's going to take your master from you today?" "Yes, I know," Elijah replied. "So be quiet." Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here, Elisha. The Lord has sent me to Jericho." And he replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Jericho. The company of the prophets of Jericho went up to Elijah and asked him, "Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?" "Yes, I know," he replied, "so be quiet." And then Elijah said to him, "Stay here. The Lord has sent me to the Jordan." And he replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and you live, I will not leave you." So the two of them walked on. 50 men from the company of the prophets went and stood at a distance, facing the place where Elijah and Elisha had stopped at the Jordan River. Elijah took his cloak, rolled it up, struck the water with it. The water divided into the right and to the left, and the two of them crossed over on dry ground. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken from you?" "Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit," Elisha replied. "Well, you've asked a difficult thing," Elijah said, "but if you see me when I am taken from you, it will be yours, otherwise it will not." And as they were walking together and talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire and horses of fire appeared and separated the two of them. And Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. And Elisha saw this and cried out, my father, the chariots and the horsemen of Israel." And Elisha saw him no more. And then he took hold of his garment and tore it in two. Elisha then picked up Elijah's cloak that had fallen from him and went back and stood at the bank of the Jordan. He took the cloak that had fallen from Elijah and struck the water with it. "Where now is the Lord, the God of Elijah?" he asked. And when he struck the water, it divided to the right and to the left, and he crossed over. The company of the prophets from Jericho who were watching said, "The spirit of Elijah is resting on Elisha." A ton of stuff is packed in those verses. Supernatural stuff, God obviously being present because all these miracles are happening. You've got the authority of God kind of being placed on Elisha. And then you've got the relationship between Elisha and Elijah, and that kind of closing and coming to an end. And I want to lean into that relationship a little bit in this passage, and I want to draw out of that some observations about following, some ideas of how Elisha interacted with Elijah that we can translate over into our interaction with God, and start to get a grip on this idea of yes, no, go, and then follow. Okay, so let's look at this a little bit. Let's look at some observations about following. You get the go, but God doesn't make the end destination happen immediately. There's a path, there's a process. Why does he have us follow? What do we need to know about following? And how do we go about kind of putting that into our lives so we wind up at this place of value? So here's some observations for you. Here's the first one. When thinking about following, it's important to remember that God does not make us follow him. God does not make us follow him. When you look at the Elijah and Elisha relationship, it's fascinating here that there's three different times that Elijah releases Elisha. You can see it. Look at verses 2, 4, and 6. He says, "Stay here. I'm going to go down to Bethel. Stay here. I'm going to go down to Jericho. Stay here. I'm going to go down to the Jordan." And every time that Elijah releases Elisha, "You don't have to come with me. Just stay here," it's Elisha who comes back and says, "No, I am going with you." It's Elisha who pursues Elijah. You bring this example up into our relationship with God, and you'll see something that's very, very important. God does not make us follow him. It's not Elijah that's begging Elisha to follow. It's Elisha insisting to Elijah that he follow him. Guys, I want you to know something, and this is a very, very important truth, so lock on to it. Ready? You don't have to follow God if you don't want to. You don't have to follow God if you don't want to. If you don't want to follow God, you will not get hit by lightning, probably. You know, it's happened a little bit in the Old Testament, but as a rule, you're not going to get hit by lightning. Okay? The ground is not going to open up and swallow you. That only happened twice in the Old Testament, but it probably won't happen to you. If you don't want to follow God, you don't have to. God does not make us love him, and he does not make us follow him. And it's very important to remember that. Living a Christ-centered life, this life of value, is an invitation from God. It's not an affliction from God. And it's very important that we discern between those two things, that we define those clearly. Because if you don't want to follow God, don't follow God. If you don't want to bring truth out of the Bible and weave it into your life, you don't have to do that. If you don't want to love the Lord with your heart, soul, mind, and strength, you don't have to do that. If you don't want to come to church, you don't have to come to church. If you don't want to give money, you don't have to give money. If you don't want to reconcile a relationship that's broken, you don't have to do that. If you don't want to follow God, you don't have to follow God. But if you choose not to follow God, God would say this. He would say, weigh that choice carefully. Jesus says it this way. He says, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world but lose his soul? Now notice what he doesn't say. He doesn't say, if you don't follow me, I'm going to fry you, or worse yet, have you transferred to Michigan. Okay? He says, what does it profit a man? If you want to gain the whole world, you can go do that. God won't stop you. But if you gain the whole world at the forfeiting of your soul, Jesus would say, weigh that very, very carefully. I'm the God of the invitation. I'm not the God of the affliction. Trust me. I am asking you, I'm calling you to follow me. I'm inviting you. The God of the universe, the maker of the heavens and the earth, the God who laid down his life for you, wants to journey through life with you. He wants to walk with you. He wants to laugh with you. He wants to cry with you. He wants to chase dreams with you. God wants to go through life with you, and he invites you to follow him on that journey, and he will take you to a place that will prosper you. That has nothing to do with making you rich. It's got everything to do with allowing you to lock onto the deep parts of life. It's an invitation. But if you don't want to take that journey, you don't have to. Stay here, Elisha. Three times. Stay here. Stay here. I release you. You don't have to follow me. It's not Elijah begging Elisha to follow. It's Elisha recognizing the opportunity to pursue his master through the very end. Now, this is why this is important. And I say this gently. It sounds a little sarcastic. I really don't mean it to be. Because I think we do it innocently a lot of times. Sometimes we do it willfully, mostly it's innocently, okay? Most of us think that when we follow God, we're doing him a favor. That's how we tend to think about that. And like I said, I'm not really trying to be sarcastic there. It's just the way we think. We think, God, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to do you a favor. God, you know what I'm going to do for you today? I'm going to go to church. Hey, God, I'm going to read my Bible. Booyah, right? God, I'm gonna not smoke, drink, or chew, or date women who do today. See? God, I'm going to get my act together today. God, I'm going to work on my marriage today. God, I am going to do you a favor. I know you want this stuff from me. It's my life, and I'm going to give you a little bit of my life today. You're welcome. Okay? Now, most of us think about our relationship like that with God that way. We perceive that we're doing something for God. That's a very wrong perception that takes us to very wrong conclusions. And I want to release you from it today. From straight from the Bible, I want to tell you that if you don't want to follow God, you don't have to. Now, this is why this is so important. When I am going through life's journey that God has called me on, if I have the mindset that I'm doing God a favor, then when I come up against difficult portions of that journey, my attitude toward God is, what's the deal? See, I don't smoke, drink, or chew, date women who do, and I'm the one that got cancer? Come on. I'm the one, you know, I go to church all the time. I even put some money in the basket. I'm the one that lost my job? Come on, I'm doing you a favor. It's supposed to be, you know, you scratch your back, you scratch mine. I'm the one who's been faithful to my wife, and I try to be a good family man, and you gave me the devil child? See? This is my mother's prayer. See? That's our mindset. I'm doing this for you, and this is what I get out of it? That all comes from this idea that we think we have to follow God. Now, you invert that thinking and bring it to a correct perspective, which is this: I'm invited. God has invited me to follow him, and he wants to prosper me and bless me. He wants me to take me to a place in life where I can get a richness out of life that I could never generate on my own. I can lay up for myself treasures in heaven. I can do things that have an eternal impact. I can love people on a level that I could never love on my own. God brings all of this out of me, see. When I realize that I've locked into an invitation instead of an affliction, then when I come across those hard times, I wind up with a biblical perspective on those hard times. Why would I go through a hard time? So that I can learn to persevere. And perseverance, when it finishes its work, causes me to be mature and complete, not lacking anything. God's refining me, not cursing me. God's molding me, not shattering me. God's teaching me and helping me, not burdening me. Why? Because he's taking me through a process so that I'll be delivered in a place where I can enjoy the fullness of what God died to give me. Big deal. First observation, you don't have to follow God if you don't want to. Three times Elijah says to Elisha, you can stay. And it was Elisha saying, there's no way I'm staying. I don't want to miss out on this, and I'm coming with you. Here's the second observation. Second observation is this: following will always have uncertainty associated with it. This is the nature of faith. It will always have uncertainty associated with it. This is the nature of faith. It's funny, as they go on this journey, Elisha comes against people who are stating the obvious. And I don't know if it got on his nerves or not. It was actually kind of hard for me to figure out how he was replying. Some commentators said he was giving a gentle answer. Prophets weren't known for their gentleness, so I'm going to go with Elisha having a personality just like mine, okay? So verse 5, look at it. Or verse 3 is actually the first time the company of the prophets come out in Bethel to Elisha, and they ask, do you know that the Lord's going to take your master away from you today? Yes, I know, Elisha replied, so be quiet, right? Down in verse 5, come to the prophets of Jericho, come up to Elijah and ask him, do you know that the Lord is going to take your master away from you today? Yes, I know, he replied, so be quiet. I think it bothered him a little bit. That word be quiet, if you push it back into the Hebrew and translate it into modern English, it means shut up, okay? Yes, I know, be quiet, leave me alone. I know, thank you, Captain Obvious, for stating to me what I already know. It's fascinating. Following will always have uncertainty associated with it. There will always be people like this in your life as you follow. And they will always state to you the risks of following. Can you imagine Craig and Jackie right now? Do you know that it's hot in Chad? Yes, I know. Be quiet. Do you know that in Africa you can catch things? You can catch things. Yes, I know. Be quiet. Let me say it in Hebrew. Shut up. Right? Okay. You're going to get this a million times. Do you know that the outcome's uncertain? Do you know that this could happen? Do you know that people are going to think you're weird? Do you know that is always going to be the case. It is the nature of following because it is the nature of faith. Catch this. Having faith is not being naive. Having faith is not being a simpleton. Faith is choosing to believe in what I cannot and will not ever fully understand. I'm making a decision. I'm not a dummy. I'm making a decision to act on faith. The greatest example of relational faith that God gives us is marriage. So 20 years ago, Heidi and I stood at an altar and we had our I do moment. I said I do, she said I do, and that was our go. We're a go for marriage, right? So we've been married, now we're going to go about being married and living our married life together. That go, we broke the moorings of our singleness, united ourselves in marriage, it's the go. Now we have to go on the journey. we have no idea where marriage is going to land us or lead us. We have no idea the twists and the turns that we're going to go down. We've had no idea how the last 20 years were going to play out, and I have no idea how the next 20 are going to play out. I don't even know how my marriage is going to be affected next week. There is no way to know that. Uncertainty is the nature of following. It's what faith is, see? And when I made a commitment to Heidi, I didn't make a commitment to this 5-point plan of marriage. It better function like this or we're going to break a contract. I made a commitment to Heidi's heart. I love you. I trust your heart. I have no idea what the outcome is going to be. I don't know how this is going to play, but I know the one that I've committed to loving. And we're going to take this journey together. It's the nature of following. So the go is fun. The go is energizing. It goes an adrenaline rush. Rah, I'm going to go. And then the next morning, you wake up with your go. She's right there, and she's got bad breath. Okay. And then it's a day after day, and there's richness, and there's wonder, and there's joy, but there's total uncertainty. It's the nature of it, the nature of faith. So following observations, number one, you don't have to follow God if you don't want to. You don't have to follow God. It's an invitation. It's not an affliction. Number two, following will always have uncertainty, and many people will often remind you of that, okay? But it's the nature of faith. You know what you're doing. You're not a dummy. You're not being brainwashed. You're choosing to trust in something that you know you cannot always define the outcome of. Last thing, last observation, following leads you to a double portion. Elijah and Elisha cross the Jordan River on dry ground. God does a miracle. Verse 9, they get across it. Once they did, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me what I can do for you before I am taken from you. Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit." Fascinating answer, okay? Now, to make it make sense, let's pack it back into the culture of the day. In the ancient Jewish culture, when a father died, his wife did not inherit anything. Who inherited things was the firstborn son, okay? So when the father died, there was no matriarchs in the ancient Jewish world. There were only patriarchs. So the son took over. And he, by birthright, would ask his father for a double portion. I would like twice as much inheritance as all the rest of the sons are going to get. And the reason, in part, why the son would get twice as much inheritance is because he would take over the affairs of his father. So I'm going to continue to manage and move the things that my father has invested himself in. And I'm going to take care of my mother and my sisters, okay? So I ask for a double portion. Elisha is Elijah's spiritual son. In fact, you heard that when the chariot of fire came down. He says, "Father, Father." He's saying spiritual father, father, father. So as the firstborn of his spiritual sons, Elijah, knowing he was leaving, asked a very kind of Jewish question to his protege. "Hey, I'm about to die. What request can I grant for you?" Elisha looks at his father and doesn't say, "Hey, I want double the money. I like a new cloak." You know, he says, "I would like to inherit a double portion of your spirit." He's saying to his father, Elijah, "I want God to do twice as much through me as he ever did through you. And I've watched you, Father. I've watched the miracles. I've watched you, God, use you to change the destiny of a nation. I've watched you proclaim truth. I've watched you love people, meet people's needs. It has so captivated me what God has done through you. It's so enthralled me. I'm so in sync with this go, with this calling in my life, that what I want more than anything is I want more of that. I want a double portion of your spirit." Now Elijah looks at him and he says, "Whoa, you've asked a very difficult thing." He said that because Elijah, in essence, is looking at Elisha and saying, wow, you asked me for something I can't give you. God has to give you a double portion. I can't do it, but you've asked a very difficult thing. But this is what God has said. If you see me being taken up, then your request is going to be granted. In other words, if you see this through to the very end, God is going to honor your faithfulness and grant you that double portion. The chariot, the horses come down, the whirlwind goes up, Elijah goes. Elisha picks up the cloak, goes back to the exact same river, works the same miracle that Elijah worked, walks out. God's presence is recognized on him. Verse 15, the company of the prophets from Jericho who were watching said, the spirit of Elijah is resting on Elisha. When you read the rest of Elisha's story, you see that Elisha literally did twice as many miracles as Elijah did. God gave him a double portion. I'm going to use you twice as much. You're going to be able to bring twice the amount of glory to me. You're going to be able to be used by me twice to the degree as Elijah. Elisha's following to the end was the demonstration of faithfulness that God blessed with a double portion. Now, let's talk about this. Guys, one day, every single person in this room is going to come to the end. Every one of us is going to be laid out in the casket. And every one of us is going to have our life summarized in 15 minutes. Everybody does it. When your life is summarized in 15 minutes, your family and the people that you have affected in your life are not going to look at the moments of your life. They're going to summarize the journey of your life. They're not going to look and say, man, I remember back in 2004 when Dad got that promotion. Woo! Yeah. I remember back, you know, in 91, Mom got her degree. Woo! 91. Hey, I remember when Dad pulled in. That was the best looking hood ornament I've ever seen. Changed my life. I remember when Mom, that's not how our lives get summarized. Our lives get summarized in view of a journey. You know, my mom was always there for me, right? She would stop anything if I needed her attention and affection. My dad, my old man would sacrifice anything for me. I knew he always wanted this and wanted that, but you know, he put me through school. He made sure that we had. I think my mom prayed for me every day. My dad, you know, I can't think of one time that my dad ever told a lie. Not once. My friend, when my life blew up, and all my acquaintances scattered, I had one friend standing. They didn't go anywhere. They loved me through that whole mess. That person at church, man, they taught me, they sacrificed, they always, that's how our lives are summarized. What does following do? Catch us, this is huge. The go is the break. Right? I'm breaking my moorings. The following, catch this, is the journey. It's where all the riches are mined. It's where all the investment is made. And when that passionate determination sets in, see, I'm choosing to follow. I'm living by faith. This is the way the Bible would say it. And I'm taking that through to the very, very end. God grants you the double portion, the payback of your life, the investment of your life, the value that's brought out of your life. because you went the distance with it. See? And you allow God to shape you and mold you and refine you. And you allow God to lead you as He helped you to write this beautiful story that lives on. See? Because we're not ever going to be kind of judged on the moments. It's not the way our lives work. It's the journey that makes the impact. It's the journey that brings out the riches. It's the journey that takes us to a place where our lives yielded to God produce double, triple what we could ever even imagine producing on our own. See how that works? Every yes has a no attached. Every yes and no has a go. And go is the trigger for follow. And that journey is not an affliction. It's an invitation. And it takes you to places where you get to receive the double portion, where God takes your life and uses it and empowers it and blesses it in ways that we could never ask or imagine. Follow. I'm going to ask the band to come out. As they come out, guys, let me ask you to think through some things. I don't know where your follow might lead you. Sometimes follow leads us across the street. Sometimes follow leads us to reconciliation with somebody else in our family room. Sometimes follow leads us to God's word. Sometimes follow leads us to the middle of Africa, literally. So I don't know where your follow takes you. That's something that you have to journey with God on. I can't make a list long enough, right? But as you're processing that through and locking into the follow, maybe think about a couple of these things. Number one, God, do I trust your heart? God will never harm you. His desire is to benefit you and prosper you. That doesn't mean make you rich. That means give you the life of great, great value. He loves you. Do you trust that so that by faith you could follow? Another thing you might think about is this. Have you ever received a go and pulled up short in the following? Yeah, I did that for a while, but then I decided I didn't want to anymore. You regret that? The amazing thing about our merciful God is His invitation is always open. When you're ready to follow, He's ready to lead you. Maybe go to God, ask His forgiveness for that, and jump back on the path. And let me say this. If I were to make a fourth observation about following, it would be this. Following can be exhausting. It just is. I get so tired sometimes, just down to my bones, just weary. And when I'm tired, sometimes it's hard to trust the heart of God. I want to quit, right? It's got to be an easier way to make a living than this. I have to go back to the heart of the one who called me. See, it's an invitation. God, you didn't bring me here to wear me out. God says, when you turn to me, I'll renew your strength. It'll be like you rise up on the wings of eagles. See, I'll give you the joy. I'll refresh the vision. But come back to my heart. That's the problem, is that we've taken our eyes off the heart of God, and so we lose the vision of God for our lives. So some of you are following hard, and you're tired. It's okay. Go back to God who wants to give you rest. Cast your anxieties on Him. He cares for you. So let me take a minute. Why don't you bow your heads, close your eyes, and let's just be still for a minute. Kind of let all this sink in a little bit. Pray. Ask God to kind of walk you through this whole step the following.